Chapter 41. Dusk Runner. I pinch a few things on my way back. Nothing irreplaceable or sentimental, but the palace is full of fancy baubles just lying about, and we'll need money for supplies on the road south. Even if we had time to pack, getting Selene out of the palace will be tricky enough without having to ruck too much gear.
Took you long enough, Selene says as I slip through the crack window into our chambers.
Where are Rojvar and Arik? I ask as I drop down beside her, listening carefully. The twins are gone, and even the spies in the walls have pulled stakes for the night. We're alone.
They got tired of watching me pace around the room and went off to bed, Selene says,
which is just as well, since I was getting close to punching Rojvar in the mouth just to wipe off that smug smile.
I'm flattered.
Usually it's me losing sleep to worry. Selene can doze through most anything.
Should have slept while you had the chance.
We're leaving, now. Selene doesn't argue or ask questions. She simply nods, fetching our weathered packs, already stuffed with clothing. I can hear the clink of our warded glass armour plates, weighing the bottoms.
Refilled our canteens, but there ain't much in the way of food. Just some nuts and dried fruit I pocketed when no one was looking.
I realise she's been planning this all along. Probably since the moment her dad said he was coming to get us. Seems like everyone expected me to find my stone sooner.
That's all right.
I reach into the many pockets of my jacket and pants, producing a small jade vase, a marble statuette, a silver tray, and a pair of golden candlesticks.
You little thief!
Selene's smile drives off a bit of my embarrassment, but the relief is short-lived. We have work to do. I retrieve my bow and quiver while Selene harnesses her spear and slings her shield over her.
Best to leave the wooden armour behind, I say. Carrying too much to be very sneaky already.
Won't miss it, Selene says.
Aye?
I'm a little surprised. You took care of that armour like it was your own babe on the road.
Dad taught us early to take care of armour, Selene says.
Anything you bet your life on is worth a polish every night.
But that ripping thing was hot as the core and clunky, shaped for a man. Creation armour is downright comfortable by comparison, stronger, lighter, and flexible so you can move.
Aye, fair, I concede. I love my Crasian silk, but I don't expect I'll ever use the armour plates.
Warded glass won't turn slippery when I do, and I feel ill at the thought of all those plates shifting and squeezing against my skin.
How do we get past the guards outside the door?
Selene asks. Same way I did, I say. Selene glances at the window.
You're going to carry me up there?
I'd love to say yes. It's what the hero should say, aye? It's what Dao would do, or Olive. I don't like touching most folk, but I wouldn't mind if it was Selene. It's a nice little fantasy, but I ain't that strong, and I know it. Selene alone outweighs me, not to mention all our gear. There's a silk pull rope in our chambers to summon servants. I climb the wall and use Mam's knife to slice it right where it meets the ceiling, dropping it to Selene. Tie this around your waist.
Ain't gonna be long enough, she warns.
Don't need it too long, I say. Got something else in mind.
Darren Bales.
Selene growls into the wind as we step onto the wardwork ledge outside our window.
If we die, I'm going to kill you.
I laugh.
Just like walking a log.
Log ain't 3 inches wide, Selene says.
That's a stick.
Anything wide enough for a cat is a country stroll for me, but I know other folks ain't the same way. Selene looks nervously at the drop, more than 6 stories down into a garden full of stone paths that would dash us both apart.
You sure this is going to work?
I ain't gonna let you fall, I say, pressing slippery fingers into the cracks of the wall, then turning sticky.
Honest word.
She nods, taking up the slack of the rope that ties us together. She pulls hard against my makeshift harness before testing her weight to the rope. But I suck in, almost becoming part of the wall. The rope is secure. She rappels down to a ward, carved in relief on the palace wall, with the ridges just wide enough for her hands and feet to catch a brief hold. The moment she's secure, I skitter down the wall after her.
Night, that's unsettling,
Selene says. Demon blood has advantages, I say,
but then Selin's foot slips, and she drops before I can secure myself again. I'm pulled free, save for one sticky hand, and my arm screams as the rope goes taut with our collective weight. To her credit, Selin doesn't cry out, but I can't keep from groaning in pain. It feels like the flesh of my hand will tear off, or my arm pull from its socket. I hang on desperately until the swinging of the rope eases enough for me to latch on with my other hand and feet.
"Put your feet on the wall," I say, trying to keep the strain from my voice. "Gonna walk us down."
I keep three limbs locked to the wall at all times as I steadily climb down, sucking in to keep from doing myself serious harm as we make our way to the garden. At last, Selin touches down and I drop the last 10 feet.
"Well done," a silky voice says. "But if you'd asked us, we could have just taken you out the royal passage."
I've got Mam's knife in hand before the voice registers. I look up and see Rojva and Arik approaching from a hidden bower, their scents masked by the flowers. Rojva wears a warded shawl around her shoulders, much like Mam's cloak of unsight. Even to me, she looks blurry, like I must appear to folk when I'm slippery. Arik has abandoned his multicoloured silk for Sharoon blacks. I can hear plates of warded glass shifting between the layers. He carries a spear and shield and looks every inch the Dal Sharoon warrior, save for the Kamanj slung over his back.
"What are you doing?"
I hiss, worried we will be overheard. White-sleeved guards patrol the grounds, and they are not known for laxity.
"Making sure you don't die in the desert," Arik says. "You can't stop us."
Selin pops a button on the spear harness on her back, loosening the weapon.
"We're going."
"You misunderstand," Rojva says.
"Olive Paper is family," Arik says. "We will no more abandon her to Marja's scum than you." A lump forms in my throat at the words. For all my doubts about where I stand with my Krasian cousins, here they are, ready to step into harm's way for us. But to Emrite, much as I want company on this trip, it's selfish to put them at risk.
"No.
Do not mistake us, cousin," Rojva says. "We are not asking permission. You know nothing of the desert waste, and though you speak our language, you'll be out of your depth when you reach Desert Spear."
"I hate to say it, but they've got a point," Selin says.
"They do, but I'm not ready to concede just yet."
"You ain't been to the desert any more than us."
"It's in our blood," Arik says.
"Always comes back to blood," I say. "Green blood, desert blood, Alagai blood, none of it means a coarse-born thing to me."
"Be that as it may," Rojva says. "The waste shaped our people. For 3,000 years, the tribes of Krasia called it our home. It darkened our skin and dictated our clothes and cooking. Every sacred scripture, every song we sing, every cautionary tale we tell children, all take place in the Krasian desert. We were learning to survive the sands and flats before we learned to roll over," Arik says. I can't argue that, so I don't.
"Say you're right. Even if this works, you'll be in for a world of trouble when you get back."
Arik shrugs. "The path to glory is full of danger, and victors are seldom punished for disobedience."
"You are not victors yet," a deeper voice intones. I turn in surprise to see Kaji, shocked that he was able to sneak up on me. No one's ever gotten the drop on me before tonight, and now it's happening at every turn. Maybe I ain't as sneaky as I think.
"Back inside, all of you, and this will be forgotten," Kaji says. "Force me to call the guard, and you will face punishment for disobedience without the shield of glory."
"Olive Paper is your blood too," Selin says. "If you don't have the stones to go after her, then someone needs to."
The words, spoken by a woman, no less, are a challenge to the ego that would set most Krasian men into a fit. But Kaji's always been unflappable. Never could get a read on him like I can other folk.
"Olive Va Ahman is not forgotten."
Kaji's voice is soothing. Calm.
"The Marja will be dealt with for this offence. Marja went back to the desert because your da murdered their Damaji," I remind him.
"They hit back. Now you hit them,
and they swear revenge. On and on and on. When does it end?
Never,
Rojva says. The Khaji and the Maja have been in blood feud through the rise and fall of the old world, and since the return. Only when my grandfather united the tribes did they hold a fragile peace. Bring an army to their doorstep. You'll have another 3,000 years of blood, I say. And it still ain't guaranteed to get Olive back.
You think you can?
Khaji sounds unconvinced. Won't start a war, we fail, I say. But you'll put more of my family at risk, Khaji says. I ain't your family, Selin says. Aye, I add. And tell me I can't stand by Olive, then I ain't either. Khaji scowls, but he sweeps a hand out into the night. Go then, but my cousins stay here. Arik steps forward, gesturing to his black robe. Look at me. You look like a Sharum, cousin, Khaji says, but you are not one. The blacks are for men who have killed Alagai.
How can I kill one if you will not let me serve?
Arik demands. That was not my decision, Khaji says. I spoke to Grandfather on your behalf, but his decision is law.
Grandfather is gone, Khaji.
The pleading in Arik's voice makes me uncomfortable, like I'm listening in to something private.
You sit the throne, at least for now. Your decision is law. You can let me be the person we both know I am, not the fraud Grandfather demands.
You're no fraud, cousin, Khaji says. Your father's magic has far better practitioners than me, and we both know it.
Arik cuts in. I need this, cousin. Better I die on Alagai talons than live my life as the court fool.
Khaji remains calm, like he was floating on his back in a summer pond. But he has no quick reply, and that's a rarity. He turns, meeting Rojva's eyes. She touches a choker at her throat. In the desert, they can all be who we wish to be. At last, Khaji gives a short nod. Everam's blessings upon you. He turns, heading into the shadows of the wall.
I saw nothing.
I'd expected a similarly unpleasant climb of the palace wall, but Arik and Rojva scoff, taking us through a hidden tunnel reserved for the royal family. We exit into a plaza down the street from the palace, ringed with giant warded obelisks. In the shadow of the post across from us, four horses nicker softly. They're hidden from sight, but I can smell the oiled leather of saddlebags and the supplies within. A familiar shape emerges, holding the reins of a powerful young courser, laden with provisions.
Aben? I can't believe it. Did everyone but me know we were leaving tonight?
I owed you a horse, son of Arlan, and by Everam I am a man who pays his debts.
And the other horses? I ask. All that tack?
Prince Arik and Princess Rojva have their own animals, and full coffers to pay for provisions.
Aben smiles.
You, of course, will have to pay for Princess Selin's horse and the other supplies.
I frown. I read Dad's journals about haggling, but there's no haggle for empty pockets.
How much?
Aben produces a small writing slate, running down the list with his pencil.
I'd say one small jade vase, one marble statuette, one silver tray, and a pair of golden candlesticks.
I laugh, pulling the items from my pockets. Tamaja's funnier than I gave her credit for. I hand them over and go to the beautiful young colt. Granda had horses on the farm, but I've always spooked them for some reason. I know my way around tack and care, but ain't spent much time in the saddle. I reckon this one's about my age in horse summers, lean and long-legged, but still with a bit of growing to do. His coat is so brown, it's almost black, and there are wards cut into his hooves, painted silver. He looks moody, uncomfortable with the bridle, but I can smell he ain't scared.
Is the son of Arlan pleased?
Aben asks. May I mark my debt to your family paid in full?
Aye, I say, taking an apple from my pack.
He's perfect. What's his name?
Whatever you wish it to be,
Aben replies. I hold out the apple slowly, letting him sniff at it and me. When he takes it, I reach out and touch him. He digs at the ground with his hooves, hungry to run.
Easy, boy.
I take gentle hold of the bridle. Dad's old messenger horse was named Dawnrunner, because Dad was always running to make it to sunrise. But I am my Dad. Gonna call you Duskrunner.